Hello, and welcome to What is Wrong with Hiring, the podcast where we talk about why hiring people and getting hired in tech are both absolute nightmares and try to figure out what we can do about it. I'm Amy Santee, a career strategist and coach for user experience professionals, and today I'm excited to be talking with Dave Miller. Dave is the founder of Design Citizen, a recruiting and career advisory firm for creative professionals. Dave works across organizations, big and small, scaling their leadership, research, strategy, design, and operations teams. He's been in the business for over 18 years, partnering with over 50 different companies for over 1,000 placements. So, wow, okay. What a storied history you have. I'm really excited to get into it, Dave. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amy, and I'm excited to be here with you.
All right. Well, you know, when I was thinking about this experience you have in recruiting and talent management, I was taking a look at your LinkedIn and I saw all these very familiar names of recruiting firms and design agencies. Like we have Robert Half, 24/7, Artifact. How did you get into this field and eventually go to open up your own firm, Design Citizen?
Yeah, it was a total accident. I don't think any recruiter goes to college to be a recruiter. My background was in advertising design, which is a mix of visual communications, branding, and copywriting. And I made a lot of mistakes launching out of school. And in hindsight, it was really not knowing what I was specifically good at, being too much of a generalist and being so junior, not enough experience. So freelanced for a while. And then, like I said, accidentally found myself in recruiting. In recruiting 101, your best roles come from the people that you already know. And that's how my recruiting career started, into technical recruiting and then very quickly into creative recruiting because of my design background. And at some point started getting heavily active in the design community, joined AIGA, for instance, and sat on their board in Seattle for years and did a lot of design related programming for the community. And that's when something switched to me. I realized I'm still a designer. It might not be designing screens or designing brands necessarily, but I'm designing community. I'm designing careers. I'm designing recruiting processes. And things opened way up for me at that point with that simple kind of shift in thinking. That brought me to Artifact eventually, which was my all-time favorite job, working in a design and innovation studio, leading their community and talent, networking with people all over the world, finding the best and brightest and bringing them out into Seattle. Back when a studio, like an innovation firm or a design agency's environment, was the place to be. And yeah, that took me across research, strategy, marketing, product, operations, HR, finance, you name it, everything that makes a studio hum. And love that. Would have never left it until COVID hit. And the business development pipeline went away. There was a layoff there, which was a silver lining for me. It was a forcing function to launch out there on my own. I had been sitting on the Design Citizen URL for several years, but I loved Artifact too much to ever leave it. And that alumni community really came out of the woodwork for me. They were like, hey, we heard you were laid off and we're working at this cool company and we're hiring and we can't find people. Can we hire you to find people? And I was like, I should take this Design Citizen thing and make it into a real business, which for me was full circle back to what I studied to do, build brands, position things for the market. So anyhow, it's been a wild ride. I love it. I'm now doing the best work of my career.
Yeah, I'd love to know a little bit more about Design Citizens. Who do you work with in terms of companies and talent? And also, what makes it a human-centered talent agency, as your website
says?
Yeah,
absolutely. So we're a team of three now, all of which are kind of principal level in their career. But Design Citizen specializes in full-time opportunities across North America. And it's has an emphasis in clearly design, but one of my big passions is in the product space. We still do branch out into marketing, creative services, advertising, brand space as well. But the majority of what I end up doing is in the product design space. It tends to be more senior level roles, senior IC to VPs of design. We're hanging out in a couple different types of companies. One would be medium to large size corporations. They're traditionally a lot of tech companies before 2023 happened and killed the market and everybody got laid off. Also work with a lot of healthcare, education-based, fintech type companies in that space. Another category would be startups of various sizes at various stages in seed funding. Sometimes these are established teams that are looking for anything from IC to director level folks. Sometimes it's very small startups that are looking for their founding designer, or they're past the founding designer. They're maybe a 5-person team and they're looking for that true VP to come in and establish the discipline and to scale that team up. And then the last category that I work in are the design consultancies of the world. And they're my favorite to work with, but I think they're also having the toughest time in the market right now, not just because of the money and how it trickles down from large corporations and large technology corporations and maybe having too many of their eggs in one basket. But I think design consultancies have been in a bit of an identity crisis for the last 15 years, really when internal corporations started building out full-blown design orgs, hundreds or even thousands of people from a headcount standpoint, design firms wondering, what is our proposition here? Where do we fit in the market? What are we offering that they don't already have in-house? But they're close to my heart and have been a big part of my career since I started.
And some of those, the best value prop for them was, let's just sell our company to the big corporation that is our main client.
Totally. I wonder if there'll be like a resurgence of that in the relative short term in the next couple of years when we see the hiring pendulum swing back in our favor. And spoiler alert, I think it will. And it better.
I know, right? For me and you and everyone
and
else.
Everybody listening. We're just waiting. We're eager. But I do believe it will. And I think that trickle of talent will begin with these larger corporations looking at the consultancies and saying, hey, let's engage you. Why we're looking for the full-time talent. They laid off so many design recruiters or recruiters in general that they're not going to be as quick or have these dedicated pipelines like they've had. The longer it takes for them to start working on it again, the more stale those pipelines are going to get. So I see it swinging in the direction of consultancies. And there's a lot of mid, small size agencies out there that I think are exhausted and are just hanging on by a thread. And this could be a windfall of work and then getting the offer to be soaked up by the mothership, so many of which passed up on 15 years ago when everybody was getting acquired, might be too good of an opportunity for them to pass, but we'll see.
I love this philosophy around your business of, something along the lines of being more of a collective organization, community oriented, really caring about all of the people who are involved in the hiring and job seeking process. And I'm curious if you can share a little bit more about what makes Design Citizen a human-centered talent agency.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes from a lot of the challenges I found early in my career working at traditional agencies and staffing agencies, which I think in some ways you're only as good as the recruiter you're working with, in the sense that I have a lot of people that I know in quote unquote staffing agencies, and there's some really remarkable recruiters there, but they're also multi-million in a multi-billion dollar industry. And there's a lot of restraints, a lot of challenges, a lot of paperwork, a lot of contracts. It's also very transactional. I always got yelled at in my early recruiting days for being on a call for an hour. It was like, you still have 50 more calls to do. What you took an hour with that person. My thought was like, we had something to talk about, or building a relationship was actually happening. Credibility and trust. You can't rush through that. All the things that I think recruiting as a profession gets a bad rap for, And that's because at the end of the day, I think the corporations see it as it's a sales role. And it's very metric driven. How many people have you talked to? How many people have you reached out to? How many hours are you putting in? And activity is important in this position, but it comes a distant second or maybe third or maybe even fourth to the human connection of what I do. And that's where I derive my energy. And it's one of the big reasons why I chose to go independent, is having control of that and knowing what some of the pitfalls of larger, more established agencies are, or even going back in-house into a firm and being siloed into doing just one thing. I think I have a special knack for seeing the potential in people, and it takes more than 15 minutes for that to come out. I love career envisioning. I love thinking aspirationally with people. It doesn't always translate to dollar and cents for me. It's hard to quantify. I tell people I play a really long game. I follow people's careers. It's interesting to see where these conversations go in months or weeks or years or decades from now. But it starts with that initial call. And so the advising is where I get my energy. It's what I love to do. And I think that goes back to the brand advertising copywriting background, is I'm looking at people essentially in a polite way as a brand. And how does that change their narrative? How does that open up possibilities for them, whether they're going back into a full-time job or into the gig economy or starting their own business like you have, like I have? So
yeah, you're seeing the whole person, the whole system, all of the stakeholders. And there are not very many firms that operate in this way or see things in this way. I would love to switch to a obviously very hot topic right now, which is the current state of the tech job market. At this point, I'm calling it over 500,000 tech layoffs in less than 2 years. And I'm using a couple of things. One is layoffs.fyi, which is the main tracker people use. Also, the fact that I don't think it's representative of some of the job cuts that don't count as layoffs because it's not full-time people, you know, contractors, temp workers, quiet layoffs, right? Quiet firing for, say, not returning to the office when you're commanded to do so, right? So I think we've definitely hit that mark. I am curious just to know, where are we at this point? What are your thoughts?
I'm optimistic because I'm experiencing more inquiry and more activity, but I also find myself way down in the logistics of it. So take a typical story, could be a hiring manager that's had a rec open for X amount of time. They don't have a lot of support because their recruiting team was cut in half, or they're working with a generalist who's working on 16 other recs across so many different teams and verticals and skills and backgrounds that they're just not getting the love they need. And so they're giving me the order, but to get the paperwork signed, it goes through procurement and through finance, and it can just bop around there for what feels like months, sometimes ending in a, no, we're not spending this money, which is difficult, but at least the inquiry was there. 2023 was so rough. It really made us work for it. And especially on the product design side, the UX side, where we were coming off of probably the pinnacle of where the industry had been towards the end of 2022. And then all of a sudden it felt like, oh, we can do this without as many of you, or we've sucked this knowledge in and we believe it. You don't need to convince us, but we don't need you to do it. And in that sense, it's been really discouraging. I think it's demoralizing too, as a candidate, when you're looking for jobs, your usual blue chip companies that you've worked with before in the past, or that you've wanted to work with, you're not seeing nearly as many postings. It's harder work to determine what you are looking at, because it's a lot of companies that you're not necessarily familiar with. And so it makes you have to work a little bit harder to understand what it is that you might be applying to. On top of that, you're looking at 800 candidates in 2 weeks, or sometimes in 4 days, depending on the brand that's hiring. And there's a part of you that's, should I even apply to this? Like, why bother? I do think that we're poised for the pendulum to swing. It's just a matter of time. What I can't tell is that in the coming months, or is 2024 going to be a 2023 and this will happen in 2025? when we think about 2024 and what's upcoming, there's a lot of wrenches that can get thrown into the tire. We have an election year, war, famine. They've been calling for a recession for 8 years now. It hasn't happened, but will this be our year? And so there's a lot of these external factors that are just unknowns. And it's hard to say how they'll play into it.
Yeah. And a lot of mixed messages, right? The mainstream media talks a lot about the economy doing really well. And then it's like the jobs are up and unemployment is so low, except they don't necessarily break it down by sector or types of jobs in the way that would benefit certain audiences like tech and different roles in tech, wondering, what about my type of job? And so it's really hard to make sense of all of this, right? And then you have the AI and LLM factor. You and I, when we were chatting before this, we even talked about Elon Musk and his approach to coming into Twitter, really fucking it up in a lot of ways, and just going with whatever's in his mind around employees and resources and the product itself and like gutting the staff there, right? And so maybe some sort of domino effect of, oh, he's doing it, so I can do it. I mean, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on that as a factor here?
Yeah, he blew the place up and he set a new low bar for how to lay off people, basically. And I think it set in motion a smokescreen for so many companies to follow. In the early days of that, I thought, oh, maybe our tech lords know something that we don't know. And I still actually think that's true, but for different reasons. I thought maybe they knew of a global recession that was going to happen. And after Twitter got blew up with essentially just waking up with not having your credentials anymore, no human outreach plan, but it allowed so many other companies to follow suit in similar fashion. We saw a lot of innovation teams get hit hard on that, entire innovation orgs get demolished across these large technology corporations, refocusing on core tools and products that were a backlog for things to get scaled, that were already making money, that were already proven. And as time goes on, I can start to see how AI factors into this. My speculation is the tech lords did know AI was coming, and at a ChatGPT level AI. And nobody specifically knew what kind of impact that was going to have on their core products or the products that they were innovating on or the new ideas that they were thinking. They knew that they were going to have to put a lot of money into those focus areas and figuring out what horse they even wanted in the race. And they weren't tightening their wallets, which is what I thought, because they're spending tons of money. If you look at Apple, I want to say it's something like 18 different startups in the last 6 months that they've bought that revolve around AI and billions of dollars that they're spending. Amazon with Anthropic and what they're investing there. And so that's where people's salaries, I think, are getting allocated to.
Yeah. Yeah, the pendulum swinging back, right? There's still jobs. There's not nearly as many job openings and there's a lot more candidates. I feel like even if the pendulum is maybe starting to swing back, like I don't know if it'll get back to the same spot it was at. This seems different somehow. And I've been paying a lot of attention to this over the past couple of years and have noticed something in the air, like something's different, like looking at LinkedIn, looking at people posting about I'm hiring for my team or hey, I got this new job. It does seem like there's an uptick. But like you said, I can't really see in front of me beyond what is going on in this moment.
I'm thinking actually like more around 2013 being where I started to feel the uptick. And then it was steadily increasing. And then it seemed to just 18, 19, 20 shoot through the roof and then pause from basically March of 2020 through September of 2020 and then start to pick back up a bit and then just explode it for the next 2 years after that. And to your point earlier, like where the job numbers, like I'm confused by it. I'm like, who is employing who here? Because in my world, we're severely underemployed right now. And I wonder who is getting employed and what are those hourly amounts and where do they fit on the economic spectrum it's not the people I'm surrounding myself from an industry standpoint. They're by and large still like, what the hell is going on? I think we just hit reset. We're back at 2013 in some ways where we haven't crashed, but it could take a decade for whatever this boom is to be. And then to your point, there's the existential factor around AI and what it means to not just be a designer or an engineer, which is funny because I feel like engineers are at, it's even a scarier part. This first year has been, we've gotten Midjourney and DALL-E and all these interesting kind of creative tools, and the way Adobe and Figma are doing their plugins and using AI to make things easier and more accessible for designers and for novices to get involved. These are all things that serve productivity alongside a lot of other things, but it's there are things that we can see. And I feel who's really going to be affected and where the market's really going to freak out is when it can code truly efficiently.
Yeah.
We're talking about like in designs a certain class, you know, people make a certain amount of money and are able to live a certain way, engineering even more so. And when AI can do that, some serious displacement will come about. And those are questions I don't have answers to. We're talking about like universal basic income type of stuff. I don't know, like 2030 or will that be 2050? And then you have to get the government to figure that stuff out, and they can't figure anything out. And then the way we can use it for misinformation. Anyways, I don't want to go doom and gloom on it, but like maybe the pendulum swinging is the wrong analogy that I'm using. Maybe the pendulum swung and swung so hard, it just fell right off of what it swings on. And there's no longer any pendulum. Now we're just in an open field and we're going to have to learn how to till the soil differently. But yeah, it's going to be a wild ride. That said, I am pro AI. AI has changed the way I do business. It's become more than a tool for me. It's truly a learning device. It's teaching me how to do things differently and achieve things that I don't think I would have been capable of doing on my own. And so I'm able to see how it can unlock human potential in a way that's really exciting for me. And on the note of design, this is going to create a whole host of different things to solve for. And at the end of the day, the human-centered part of it is creating great experiences for the people using these services, tools, platforms. And there'll never be an end of figuring out how to do it better. And so in that sense, I can see a ton of opportunities. And I think those that are embracing AI, learning AI, or being empowered by AI are going to ride that wave easier. Now, will we be able to make room for so many people again, like the last 5 years really were, where we really saw the rise of different master's programs and boot camps and cert programs or associate degrees at community colleges? Can we bring in so many people? Will a lot of production work be able to be automated and eliminated? I'm inclined to say yes, but how will it open up? That's above my pay grade. What's going to be new that, like, I'm not quite sure what it is.
Yeah. What jobs will there be that don't currently exist, or new iterations of jobs or hybrid versions of different jobs? There are some downsides and there are some upsides. And I think very few people fully understand what's going on with it. So we just have to make sense as we go forward. We have talked about design in terms of how the field has been impacted by the layoffs. I'm curious, because you recruit for roles and teams in other disciplines, so research and strategy, creative technology, product management, program management, can you talk a little bit more about these other fields and how those have been affected in terms of layoffs or changes to teams? Are any of them faring better or worse?
Yeah, I feel like there's an equal hit that the ship took. They're all a collective on the same ship. Research and strategy got hit particularly hard, and I think there's a connection to that and the innovation teams getting demolished. If you're figuring out like, what should this be and what are we creating and why, that's where, in my book, the most fascinating work is being done, that 0-1 stage. And the best work that's being done there has a foundational root of research in there. And so if teams aren't focusing on that, there can be less of a need for research. There's still the need for the usability studies and making products better and iterating on different versions and the research that happens there. But some of that 0-1 got hit. And so I'm finding a lot of people in my community that are from that space and are a bit uninspired by what they're finding on the job boards. Strategy's always been in a hard spot because it means something differently for every organization. And the trick is, how do you position it? How do you pitch it? How do you connect it to certain outcomes and impacts and convince a company that they need it? And so strategy tends to also piggyback on, I'm a researcher and strategist, or I'm a strategist and UX designer. The creative technologists seem to be faring because, you know, on that front end side and prototyping side and smoke and mirrors type of side, and especially those that, you know, are very used to working with design and maybe in environments that have very specific design systems and guidelines in place, they can almost double as several things. And so they're highly employable. Which leads me to the most employable that I see right now, what companies are looking for the most seems to be this player coach type of role. This is somebody who's an adult in the room who can manage and lead programs, organize things, and communicate effectively. But at the same time, they can also be in the role. So they might be the best UX designer on the team, or the best visual designer, or the best technologist, the lead researcher. And so when they're a mix of both, they're faring really well. On the flip side of that, who got hit hard were the opposite ends of the spectrums. People who are just trying to kick off their design career are finding it extremely rough, or people that were pivoting into it are finding it very rough. And then the opposite, very senior leaders in design, VPs, heads of, senior directors, especially leaders that were managers of managers. I think what the work they do is so important and so nuanced, and it's not as easy to position to a company when you're not necessarily showing this pretty screen that you design, when you're talking about embedding and evangelizing design throughout the business, or converting skeptics to work with you instead of against you, how design will raise the bottom line, creating an organization with processes and a culture and the nuances of solving those problems. These are hard things to articulate in a quote unquote portfolio. A portfolio it's not a portfolio at that stage for them. And it's where clients or companies are saying, hey, you know what, we'll do away with you. Your whole org will report to a GM or engineering and or product. And the person that reported to you will do your job and their old job. They'll get a little title bump. And so that's where I'm seeing the vibe of the people that weren't laid off is, by and large, grateful to have a job. These same people in 2021 were uninspired and in a bit a giant eye roll of like, I'm definitely interested in what's next. Find me something. And now there's a fear of, oh my God, there's nothing out there that looks really interesting to me. I'm glad I'm at where I'm at, even though 2 years ago I was so bored by it. Thank God I have it. But at the same time, now they're getting burned out. The reality is this leadership community feels so displaced right now, and I think mentally exhausted, in the sense of, especially when you're over 50, and it's like, I had gotten to this place in my career and now you're telling me this place might not exist at this level. Mm. And what the hell am I supposed to do now?
Just become a career coach. Become a coach of some kind. That seems to be the pattern.
Right? I know it's tough. I don't, and that's maybe a whole other different podcast as far as where they go or what they do. But I do talk to leaders that inherited the design team or design org, and they have a certain level of design maturity. Like, I'm working with them, and I'm like, I'd like to work with this person. And they respect what design does, but they're required to be in the weeds enough that they know, they're good enough of a leader to know that they don't know what to do in this situation. And it's double time for them, this CTO or general manager or managing director that's more from engineering or product. It becomes this suck on them. Or even ones that are customer VP of customer experience who comes from marketing and brand, who can really talk the talk of product, but they're not from product. And they need some visionary thinking there and structure. And so these people aren't necessarily getting the budgets approved to bring on this person, but they crave it. They're like, I just want to hand this all back off. Can we bring in a peer to me and give it all to them? And I'm feeling that, sensing that, and hearing that. And these people do have power. And so once the dust settles, I think there's that opportunity of, hey, you've got to get this off my plate. We've got to bring in somebody super senior to manage this.
Yeah. What about product management? Are they pretty much doing great at this point? Surely there's been some layoffs, but it seems like product managers rule the roost in a lot of ways. They're a highly valued role. What have you seen with that discipline?
They seem to be, in my world, the most steady. And I know I'll get flack for this, but also maybe the unhappiest in some ways of, you know, a good product manager is essentially the business owner. They understand all facets. They're the center spoke in the wheel. They're leading the wheel. Maybe they're the steering wheel instead of the wheel, and have control over where the tires go. But I think some of them are being drawn into this position of, hey, we've gotten rid of your peer counterpart in design. And now you've inherited this team more formally in a way that just took out a stopgap that's creating more of a weight and more of a learning curve for them and more pressure around making a decision. I'd probably get flack for this a lot because I think there's also the age-old battle between the design and engineering team. There's also that kind of battle between, especially I find when we go higher up in an organization, the battle between the product leader, the VP of product versus the VP of design. Mm. And my sense is that in most places, the VP of product wins that pecking order, not to mention whatever egos might be involved there. And so I find my product managers, again, less affected by the layoffs, but being shoved into more work or more responsibility, which creates less time for them to be a person, for them to be with their family, and also not a ton of hiring though around that space either. It's not like these are open by the thousands either. So even when they're looking out there, there's the feeling of, oh, maybe I'm trapped.
Yeah. I want to talk a bit about just how the job search process, the hiring process has changed in the past year or two. And I've been in my coaching practice now, I'm into year four. And so, you know, roughly the same amount of time that you've been doing Design Citizen. And I've seen some things change in terms of job search process taking much longer, several months longer. I see people at all levels having challenges finding work. Even people who come from well-known brands, people with really good skill sets, really good experience, definitely people who are new to just tech in general, new to design, academic transitioners are, some things are the same, some things are different. I'm curious what trends you've seen for, again, the hiring process and the job search process and how they overlap as well.
Yeah, I think some things have gotten, there's like some corrosion that are happening in the process, which again could swing back in our favor in the sense that you mentioned things are taking a long time, which in some ways has always been the case. But sometimes that's indicative of a bad process or the people that are existing there overworked, whether it's the recruiter that's overworked or it's the hiring manager who has to become the recruiter and they're overworked, or how finance is approving budgets. And so that exists. I'm also seeing, on the flip side, things sometimes moving so quickly that companies end up getting their offer rejected by candidates, especially candidates that are navigating the market fairly well. They're at this sweet spot in their career. They have a lot of really interesting stories to tell and They've done a really great job of kind of understanding themselves as a brand and how they're positioning themselves and pitching that in the market.
I feel like I'm seeing more homework assignments, skills assessments, quote unquote free work being requested of candidates in design specifically. It seems like some hiring processes are getting bloated in certain ways too. I don't know.
I've seen it more and more as well. And it's mind-boggling for me. I hate it. This prove it first, as if I don't have a full portfolio here. And you want me to dedicate 4 hours or 16 hours or whatever it is, and you can crowdsource this from the other 800 people that have applied. Although, to be fair, I don't think a lot of companies are crowdsourcing. I do think that this could be a part of the corroded system. Like, you've lost some voices at a high up level or on the recruiting side that are design specific from a screening standpoint that allows this voice or this thinking or this owner. I see this a lot. Me personally, my clients aren't allowed to do that. I will not work on that rec if a requirement is for them to do homework.
I appreciate that. I think it's important for those who are able to say no to such things to go ahead and do that and to try to shift it a bit so that it's less of a requirement across the board. And then some people are like, I need a job. I need money. I will do whatever I need to, but that can add up. And it's just a huge burden on people. So thanks. I'm glad that is your policy in practice.
And it's not me just saying no to the client. That usually turns into a whole other conversation of like, why do you require this? And peeling that back, all the layers of that back, that will get to a point where if they're still so strong willed on needing it, then there's the no from me as far as accepting it as business. As a business owner, I get the luxury of eeny, meeny, miny, moe, who do I want to work with? And typically my vibe check on that is, would I work with this person? Like, would I work at this company? Even if the company's ethos as a whole might not be totally aligned with mine, does that exist within the hiring manager? And then most importantly, what's the story, the people that I might place with this company, what's the story they're going to be able to tell in 2 years or in 5 years? Is this job just going to lead them off a cliff, or are they going to reach back out in 3 years and we're going to catch up on what they did? And I'm going to be like, hey, that's really cool. Or this is highly marketable.
Yeah. What have you noticed that's similar or different in terms of offers, negotiations, wages? When you don't have as many offers, then you don't have as much leverage. I do see wages falling to some extent. Contractor rates are never really that good, but full-time total comp offers seem to be lower at some places. High level, what are you seeing with that?
High level, I haven't seen a drastic shift, which I'm actually somewhat surprised about, because that's one of the areas that in a down market, companies and corporations can grab back power. Money, the ability to choose your hours or your location, the perks that you get, the benefits that you get, the stock options. These are all things that can fluctuate in a down market and where companies can take advantage. And so the good news for me is that it's not, yes, it's down, but it's not in such a wild way. I'm not even sure that it's a mandate internally. I almost wonder if it's us, if it's the candidates that might be lowering the salaries rather than HR saying, hey, for now on, level sixes need to make between X and Y. Or maybe we don't change the level money, but we want everybody's offer starting at the low end of level six, you know? I'm not sure if that conversation's happening or where it's happening. I don't hear it happening on that level. What I do see, though, is at this point, people that have maybe been unemployed longer than others are starting to have doubts of their own worth. Mm. And that leads them to potentially undervaluing themselves or mentioning money or amounts or negotiating differently with a less confidence or less being less specific around where they are. And so maybe that opens the door for companies to be like, oh, maybe we can get them at X amount. It's still fair. It's still within the level bracket, but I'm not sensing a hard line of I need to make X. And yeah, so I sense the willingness of people to be more open-minded on what they'll do, whether it's full-time, all of a sudden, yeah, I'm open to consulting too. All of a sudden, I'm open to short-term freelance. And all of a sudden, my $200 an hour is $150, and now it's $125, just because they don't want to miss out on this unknown competition by them. And I don't think we're communicating mm-hmm. enough to keep a strong line and say, hey, we can still be valued at a certain amount. That said, the offers that I'm extending, the money conversation with my corporate clients, although middle of the road, not necessarily, wow, that's going to be the biggest package I've ever negotiated right there. That has not happened this year. But I haven't been shocked. Everything has been like, hey, that's in line. That's competitive enough. And through this conversation, I'm going to try to edge that up to the higher end. And so I worry that it might be in our heads in the sense of, I've got a mortgage and I got two kids. And I was really strong on things the first 3 months. And I made it to the last interview, but I didn't get the offer. And I didn't get feedback on why. And I thought it went really well. And I can see who they hired on LinkedIn. And I don't know, I think I'd be better than them. Or maybe it's a wash. Was it money? Was it $10,000? Was it $100,000? What was it? And questions they'll never really get answered. So,
I mean, there's a lot of fear, right? In scarce moments like this, not enough jobs to go around. People have families to support. Money and negotiation and asking for what we want and deserve, that's always been a challenge for a lot of people. And now that there are fewer jobs and more competition, I think you're right. I think that does affect people's like mindset or approach to those things. Maybe willingness to say no to a job that isn't a good fit in certain ways, but there will be a paycheck, and the fear of like, how much longer would I have to wait to find something else? And in that case, it's like, just keep looking for something else and then you can go to the other thing. Mm-hmm. And again, contractor rates in less than $50 for technical roles at a non-entry level, like that's just ridiculous, Agreed. Right? So I think contractor rates, especially through agencies that staff a lot of roles, those tend to be on the lower end anyway.
It's hard too on the freelance or consulting side, because like I've expanded my model to take on that. It's been one of the adjustments I had to make over the last year, where it's like, should I really pass up on this work? And part of my criteria is still is the company interesting? Is the person interesting? Do they have money that I can pay people well with? And I think the difference is I don't want to be a staffing agency. I don't think of myself as a staffing agency, but the markups are so crazy that staffing agencies take. And I find myself wondering if I'm an idiot, because the money I give to my contractors is every time I talk to a contractor, not every time, but more times than not, it's, oh, you want me to do that for that rate? That's $50 more an hour than what I'm getting paid through X working for Y. And it's just like, that's human-centered.
I don't think you're an
talent
idiot.
Right there.
Yeah.
That's me being like, you're doing all the work. And yes, it's hard work to find you and to place you and to payroll you. And there's expenses. But I'm going to take what's fair there, not to make more an hour than you're making an hour for 6 months. So yeah, there's disparity.
Sounds communist if you ask me. No, I love that. I love that. Fair labor, right? Like the value of the labor that's going in and who's doing the work, and recruiting is a business, but you're running your business differently and in a more ethical way, even if there is some profitability. So I have a lot of respect for that. Absolutely.
It's the citizen in design, which is more core than even the human centered. It's this, the idea of a good citizen, of a social contract, of being a neighbor. And sometimes when I'm working with my larger corporations, again, I can feel like I'm getting smacked around by a billion-dollar firm. And I wonder if I'm just a complete idiot of why didn't I charge that or pay that candidate that. And yeah, I'm constantly confronted with the capitalistic structures of society and the driven mindset of some of these leading organizations, many of which are filled with tons of people I respect and love working with. But especially when finance gets involved, that's when I'm just reminded. I'm like, motherfuck. Like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
As we close down, there's a couple other topics I wanted to discuss. Part of what you do in your role at Design Citizen involves coaching job seekers. And you talked about positioning, storytelling, and that is the core of doing a job search, showing up in public as a professional, positioning, storytelling, branding, whatever you want to call it. And then infusing that into all of these different materials, your professional assets, so your resume, your LinkedIn, a website, perhaps, any conversation. I always think of it as like a journey map of a job search where you have all these different touch points and thinking about your audience, right? So if people are checking off all of those boxes, they are doing informational interviews, they're tapping into their network, they're putting themselves out there. Let's just say they're checking off all the boxes, all the things they need to do. They're even potentially being strategic about it, being selective. If they're doing all of that and it's not working, then what's going on? Like, how would you coach someone who is checking off all of those boxes?
I think this is where like your services, Amy, like the coaching services are so important. I'm all for independence and self-reliance, huge practitioner of that. I am constantly surprised at, I do a lot of advising. So it's not as formalized as what you do, for example, and it's not necessarily tacked on to specific goals or structured in a certain way. And it's more freestyled. And it's interesting to see what people hear in those advising conversations. And when they come back and they make some changes, and some people clearly just get it and it unlocks a whole new paradigm for them. And I'm looking at them in a completely different way. Other people can somehow make what was okay even worse sometimes. And that's the advising side. We're getting advice from a lot of people. Hopefully, when you're creating these assets, you're reaching out to past colleagues and coworkers and friends, and you're getting their two cents. It's your research and insight gathering stage of your career. Does this make sense? Any feedback? Don't hold back. And that's the advising side. I think where the coaching comes in is letting go of control a little bit. Mm. There's something about a transaction of money, of, hey, Amy, I'm going to pay you to be gentle, but tear me apart if you need to. Tear me apart and put me back together. I don't think necessarily on the coaching side, what anybody's doing is necessarily like rocket science, but there's something that happens when a person commits to the curriculum and says, you know what, I am going to have these 3 or 5 sessions. I am going to transfer money on this. I'm going to listen to them differently. I'm going to take notes differently. I'm going to walk away with actionable insights in a deadline because I'm going to talk to her again next week. And I'm going to feel like an idiot if I'm paying X amount of money and I'm just showing up being like, yeah, I didn't do anything between our last sessions. And so there's something about a commitment to self, similar to an athlete having a personal trainer, and not even an athlete, maybe somebody who's ready to make a lifestyle change. Mm-hmm. And is, yeah, I can watch YouTube and I can formulate a diet or an exercise routine, but for some reason, I'm still not getting out of bed for it. And then get somebody who does this for a living, who's been around the block and who's seen a million different paths. I think that's the other thing. It's perspective. Even when you're talking with designers or the recruiter that you know, your friend that's the coach, and it's more on the advising side, there's still a different commitment level that's happening there. If nothing's working for you, I would say that the opportunity, though, and I speak from experience, I do this, I've been here, I'll be there again at some point in my career, I have no doubt. In some ways, we're there right now as an industry, but this down, even though it can feel anxious with money and bills and mouths to feed and stuff like that, it's It's about activity. It's getting together with people and thinking about products and being wild with it or services. It's disidentifying yourself with the title of design or leader or manager or whatever, and being the novice baker or fence builder or gardener for a moment and embracing that. It's sitting in the fear. It's allowing the fear to motivate you and light fires. It's preparing for change and pivots and unknowns. And like any other event in life, what can feel like maybe anything from a swampland to just a murky area of unknowns, assuming that you choose to put one foot in front of the other and break through to the other side, you rarely regret these times. They forge who you are. They change the way you think and how you believe, or your routines and your outlook and your ego for that matter. And I found personally, when I've gone through those breakthroughs in life, there's a grace that comes about that I'm like, holy shit, I'm so glad I went through that. And like I said, coach or personal trainer or a therapist are all good things to invest in if you're able to, in the design journey of designing you.
I love that. Yeah. And that's relevant to me too, because my business has also been affected as part of this tech design professional ecosystem, right? You talked about money trickling down from corporations to employees or teams to service providers, right? And it's been a moment for me to, yeah, reassess, like, what am I doing and what kind of work is going to pay my bills, but also is still enjoyable and meaningful? And how do I pivot and switch up my services? And I'm still thinking through that stuff. And you know what? I'd love to be just coasting like I was 2 years ago, not having to put much effort into any of this. And things were golden. And I didn't expect what happened with the job market. And I guess I rested on my laurels a bit as well, thinking, oh, you know what? I'm known out there. I have a great client base. And wow. So even though it's been really challenging, I am hoping that it will lead to what you said, which is a reflection back to go, oh, I learned a lot out of that experience and went to bat for myself and faced the challenges and came out on the other end. So thanks for that motivational speech there.
Keep fighting the good fight.
This has been so insightful, learning more about your work and your perspective on everything that's going on. I wanted to ask, do you have any pluggables that you would like to plug? What's coming up next for you?
Yeah. Speaking of these down times, it's created space for me to think differently around my business and my offerings, and they haven't deviated wildly, but it's opened up the space for me to do some of the most inspiring work of my career. I haven't felt this inspired, I don't know, since like college, or maybe even earlier than that. And so again, I'm experiencing it in real hand. Thankful for the clients I have, but it's not 2021 right now, where it's a line around the block. I've developed a career branding exercise for design professionals that is AI enhanced self-discovery tool to help people frame their careers and align their personal and professional personas. And it's going to be what anchors my advising that I do. And that'll be launching out in May. It's called The Inspired Self. And people can follow me on LinkedIn for both updates on that. And then I post roles that I'm working on occasionally, or thoughts I have on the industry on LinkedIn as well. And you can find me at linkedin.com/HeyDaveMiller. And then, of course, you can look at designcitizen.com. That's my company, alongside Sarah Strasburger and Jen Hopper, two phenomenal people and principals and recruiters in their industry with just so much experience. I'm so fortunate to be working with them both. You can follow us there. But Amy, I just really appreciate all you do for the community and for thinking about me and for having me on here.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. All right, everyone, that is all the time we have for today. If there's a question or topic or person that you'd like us to bring onto the show, please reach out to me on LinkedIn. And if you're so inclined, we'd greatly appreciate your support on the podcast. So if you like the show, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. Once again, I'm Amy Santee, and Laura and I would like to thank all of you for listening. We wish you all the best of luck with your search, no matter what you're looking for. We are rooting for you.